Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is Thursday, May 17th, 2001. In the fireside room this evening is an acoustic guitar concert by Brad Sundahl. Today's session number is MU-2001-2.
I'm Brad Sundahl. I live in Spirit Lake, Idaho, and for about 25 years or more I've been playing guitar. And fairly early in my guitar career, I learned about John Fahey. How many of you have heard, well, you just heard some of his music there, but how many have you heard of John Fahey before I came here? Not too many people. He's sort of obscure. Much better known as Leo Kottke, who John Fahey sort of got going. Like, the first two Leo Kottke albums were recorded on a label that John Fahey started called Tacoma Records, which is named after Tacoma Park, Maryland, not Tacoma, Washington, for those of you out here. He was a very interesting character. I got a chance to interview him in about 1976, at about the time this album I was playing was recorded. I'll talk a little bit about the interview. He died this spring at about the age of 60 or so, after bypass surgery. But I want to read a little bit from an article in the New York Times that was written 3 years ago, telling about his life. Mr. Fahey never lost interest in music, but in the last 10 years, he hasn't produced much. He divorced his third wife, Melody, and lost his house. He contracted chronic fatigue syndrome. He entered a new phase of alcoholism by drinking beer compulsively for the energy it gave him. He discovered that he had diabetes. For a time, he was homeless and lived in a men's shelter in Salem, Oregon. Sober now, he lives in a motel in Salem where he recorded City of Refuge on equipment in his room. During the down years, he supported himself by scouring secondhand stores and flea markets for used classical records, which he sells to collectors. Mr. Fahey still draws a few of his old fans to his concerts, and they occasionally request his old music. "I don't talk to them," he explains in a coffee shop near his Chicago hotel 2 days after the concert. "If they keep it up, I tell them, look, if you want to live in the past, go live in the past, but don't try to take us with you." Well, I'm kind of one that likes to live in the past. I think he probably saw better days in his earlier days. And people sometimes, I think that he tended to think whatever he was doing at the current time was the best that he could possibly do and be a little disparaging of his past. But I'm going to play some of the music that he played in his early days. He was really the person who most promoted the possibility of a person just being an instrumental guitarist. In any type of popular way. So he led to other guitarists like Leo Kottke that could do that. But even in his middle period, he started playing with an orchestra. And once you get popular, you start getting other musicians and stuff like that. He called his music American Primitive Guitar because it was sort of like primitive painting, he saw it as. He wasn't a trained musician, not a classical musician, but he figured out how to play tunes that sound classical on his own. A lot of his album titles, starting with his first one, have death related to it. He called the first one Blind Joe Death, and he made up a mythical blues personage named Blind Joe Death, which he pretended to be. Other albums included there's always a mixture of religion, or he called it The Transfiguration of Blind Joe Death, The Voice of the Turtle, which was particularly meaningful for him. It's from some quote in the Old Testament that I forget right now. And also, he was a fanatic about turtles. And in my interview, I asked him if it was true that he and Leo Kottke once liberated a turtle from the Como Park Zoo in St. Paul, and he said, yes, it was. It was deplorable, the conditions they were keeping him in. So it was just one of his things, I guess. Other albums that he had included The Dance of Death and other plantation favorites. So death was a recurring image through his work. And since he died, I thought, that's appropriate to discuss in relation to him. Okay, I'm going to start off with a tune that he called the Southern Medley. Things that's nice about instrumental music is if the lyrics are not politically correct, you don't have them there to irritate people. And the first song that was in that series was Old Black Joe, which is about a servile black slave and a sort of a romantic reminiscence of it by Stephen Foster. The second one, Camptown Ladies, was also by Stephen Foster. And this is just in an aside. Stephen Foster, although he wrote Carry Me Back to Old Virginia and I Come from Alabama with a Banjo on My Knee, actually came from Pennsylvania and never lived south of the Mason-Dixon line. And he was America's first commercial songwriter. He did about as well as most songwriters. He ended up, his wife left him to become a telegraph operator so she could support herself. He was going broke fast, but he did leave a legacy of great tunes for America. And of course, the third one was Dixie. Now, from his choice of tunes there, one might assume that John Fahey was, maybe a bit racist, and maybe in terms of the times you wouldn't think that, but he actually got very into the blues revival in the late 1950s. And was, in fact, instrumental in finding two of the old great blues musicians, Booker White and Skip James, were both found after they'd recorded many years previously through the efforts of John Fahey. One more note about Stephen Foster. During the Civil War, he was writing pro-Union songs, too. So. I mentioned blues. This next tune is one that John Fahey also played, originally written by Leroy Carr, called the How Long Blues. Thank you. playing some more blues later. Another thing that John Fahey did was popularize the playing of hymns on the guitar. His most successful albums was two sets of Christmas carol albums for the instrumental guitar, and he got his widest acceptance for those very popular Christmas stocking stuffers. But one of the early ones that he played on his albums is, he called it St. Patrick's. It's actually called St. Patrick's Breastplate, and it's in the LBW as "I Bind Unto Myself This Day." And I wanted to play it with a capo. Start over again. Another song, a lot of his early albums were not original material, and this one he called the Hawaiian Two-Step, and on another album of about the same time it was called the Spanish Flang Dang, so it's of mixed ancestry, I guess, or something. John Fahey original I'm going to play tonight, and I'm even confused about the name of it, but I think it's called The Last Steam Engine. Thank you. Now, I think one of the reasons instrumental guitar isn't that popular is because there's a part of our brains that really is kind of bored with instrumentals. I mean, if you listen to the radio, very seldom do instrumental things get to be top 40 hits, for instance. There are very few of them that ever have. And so at this point, I'm throwing in a tune that John Fahey played, but I'm going to sing the words that go with it. And it's the story of the first automatic pace setter, or pacemaker. This was back in the 1850s. And I don't know if the village medic was aware of that or not, but this song was written by Henry Clay Work, and since I'm a clay worker, it's only appropriate that I should play my grandfather's clock. And you're welcome to join in on the refrain or whatever parts you know of it. My grandfather's clock was too low for the shelf, so it stood 90 years on the floor. Taller by half than the old man himself, but it weighed not a penny weight more. It was bought on the morn, on the day that he was born. It was always his treasure and pride, but it stopped short, never to go again when the old man died. 90 years without sleep. Stopped short, never to go again when the old man died. In watching its pendulum swing to and fro, many hours he had spent when a boy. Through childhood and manhood, the clock seemed to know and to share both his grief and his joy. For it struck 24 when he entered at the door with a blooming and beautiful bride. But it stopped short, never to go again when the old man died. 90 years without slumbering, tick-tock, tick-tock, his life's seconds numbering, tick-tock, tick-tock, but it stopped short, never to go again when the old man died. My grandfather said that of those he could hire, not a servant so faithful he'd found. For it kept perfect time and it had one desire, at the close of each day to be wound. As it kept to its place, not a frown upon its face, as its hands never hung by its side. But it stopped short, never to go again when the old man died. 90 years without slumbering, tick-tock, tick-tock, his life's seconds numbering, tick-tock, tick-tock, but it stopped short, never to go again when the old man died. It rang an alarm in the still of the night, an alarm that for years had been dumb. And we knew that his spirit was pluming for flight, that his hour of departure had come. Still the clock kept the time with a soft and muffled chime as we silently stood by his side. But it stopped short, never to go again when the old man died. They just hadn't developed the automatic defibrillator yet, so now it's all worked out. I did have an opportunity to interview John Fahey. It was between sets at a concert in Minneapolis. And it was, I didn't do that many interviews, but it was by far the most bizarre interview I've ever done. He was an unusual person. He started off by telling me he didn't really want to do the interview. He was only doing it as a courtesy to the people that had brought him to play, which put me on, you know, feeling like, oh, great, this guy doesn't even want to talk to me. And I came up with a list of people. I mean, for me, he was already a great influence. I was really happy to be able to interview this guy, my hero. And so I said, I wonder about these people and how they influenced you. And I listed off people like Sam McGee and Mississippi John Hurt and various guitarists that I felt like had probably influenced him, Elizabeth Cotton. And he said, well, those people are all dead and gone. That was his full statement on that. And I was hoping to spend some minutes talking about it, but that was all he had to say about it. At any rate, I would say that I didn't learn so much from the interview. I learned that he maybe was having a hangover. He was popping about 6 aspirin, and he said he had a headache. And he did have an alcohol problem, which wasn't obvious to me, but did become so. What really made the interview unique was at this coffee house, which was at the University of Minnesota, when John Fahey started to play, he was introduced by a guy that was sort of like he was introducing Sunday at the Speedway. And now, here's John Fahey! He shouts into the microphone, and John Fahey quietly plays his guitar. Well, during the intermission, when I'm interviewing him, the same person comes in and says, okay, you got to get back on stage, and he's really hyper and everything. And John Fahey says, well, I'm busy. And in fact, he had cut all of his strings right down the middle as soon as he got in there, and he was going to change his strings between sets. So it was going to take him some time to do that. Well, this person kept coming back and being more and more high-pressured about it. And the last time that he came in the room, from the angle where I was sitting, I could see that he had a knife that was hidden by his hand, and he was holding this down in front of him. And I'm thinking, this guy is nuts, which I sort of wondered about already. And he was pressuring John again to do it. And it did impress me that I don't know if John Fahey could see the knife, but John Fahey just yelled at the guy and said, get out of there. And his commanding presence was able to get rid of this guy who was sort of nuts to go away. So that was probably what impressed me most. He also had a couple of good stories about Minnesota. I said, you really like Minnesota being here? And he says, I hate Minnesota. He said, the last time I was here, I was in a motel and next to a bunch of high school wrestlers. And they were carrying on at 2 a.m. So I went next door to tell them to be quiet and they beat me up. I ended up in the hospital. So you can see he was kind of a upfront kind of guy. Okay, well, I want to look into John Fahey's roots. I was telling Jeshua before I started that I got into him by my interest in the roots of music. John Fahey himself was researching the roots, as I said, of blues music. He was also interested in pre-bluegrass, and people aren't really aware of what pre-bluegrass is. It was called string band music, and it was popular in the whole southeastern United States, Nashville. The main difference between it and bluegrass is they didn't have a big string bass or any kind of bass at all. They just had guitar, mandolin, and banjo. At any rate, I want to play a song by one of the pioneers of pre-bluegrass. His name was Sam McGee. He started playing with Uncle Dave Macon, later played with the Delmore Brothers. This is a song, an instrumental. He was also quite a bit an instrumental guitarist. He would sing, but would play some instrumentals as well. It's called Ching Chong. Thank you. Now, that was rather a fast piece. The next one's slower. Back to our death theme. This is a tune that... the rest of my tunes aren't ones that John Fahey played, but they're more his sort of source material. Blind Lemon Jefferson was probably one of the people he was imitating and calling himself Blind Joe Death. He was a Texas blues musician. And he wrote the song, "See That My Grave Is Kept Clean." Book, it was written that there was a little picture back in the 60s of Blind Lemon Jefferson's grave, and there were weeds growing up around it and everything. But thanks to the World Wide Web, you can go to a place, and I forget the address right now, I'm sorry, but I'm sure you can find it. It's something like findagravestone.com, and you can look up Blind Lemon Jefferson, and they have a picture that he has a nice new stone, and it's neatly kept, and so somebody is now seeing that his grave is kept clean. Mississippi John Hurt was definitely a source for John Fahey. On one of his albums, he wrote a death song, a funeral song for Mississippi John Hurt. But I'm going to play some of Hurt's tunes, a little more upbeat. "Make me down a pallet on your floor and I'm satisfied." Let's see if I can get rid of this buzzer. Okay. Good man, never know. so nice and brown. I love you, baby, you're so nice and brown. I love you now, mama, you're so nice and brown. Tailor-made and you ain't no hand-me-down. But just as sure as two and two make four. Just as sure as two and two make four. Just as sure now, mama, two and two make four. I'm leaving here, gonna walk right out your door. Well, 3 times 7 make 21. Satisfied. It's gonna bring me back. I'm satisfied, tickled too. I'm old enough to marry you. I will be satisfied with you presently. Satisfied, tickled too. Old enough to marry you, and I will be satisfied with you presently. Now, this next tune comes from a competitor of John Fahey's named Stephen Grossman. As I said, John Fahey was kind of a strong, outspoken person, and on one of his later records, he has On the Disembowelment of the New Age, I think is one of his titles. But at this time, he wrote one called The Assassination of Stephen Grossman, who at least posthumously claims that John Fahey was his friend for a long time. But this one Stephen Grossman does called Colored Aristocracy. The term comes from, a poem from the Harlem Renaissance, but the tune is unknown in origin. Okay, now I'm going to move into the church music area. This is a good venue to try some of that on. One of the first ones that I encountered, actually through Leo Kottke, who I heard before John Fahey, he was following John Fahey's lead in playing In Christ There Is No East or West. Now, I mentioned the record company that he started, and he started having other musicians on it. One of them was named Sonny McGrath, and that was also one of the first times I heard a hymn called "'Tis So Sweet to Trust in Jesus," which isn't in the Lutheran book, but is a fairly old hymn. Gonna try that now. I've put together a medley of three hymns, which I've taken the parts to call the title, "Shall We Gather Like a Shepherd in My Father's World?" The way those flow together. The second tune that I played was the traditional pre-LBW tune for "Like a Shepherd Lead Us," or whatever it is, which was by the composer William Bradbury, and my name being Brad and the theme being Barry and death, I just had to throw that in. Okay, now I'm going to play Pachelbel's Canon in D, however I play it in C. That's an example of the American primitive style, because I can't read music and don't know any classical music except for by ear, so it probably only vaguely resembles Pachelbel's Canon in D. Now, the funny thing about John Fahey, he was so anti-success. I mean, even though he'd established this record company and everything, he kind of wrote it into the ground and finally sold it off. And at any rate, He never got into Irish music, which seems like a real mistake, because it got really popular then, and his name was John Fahey. And the only thing that St. Patrick's breastplate's the only thing I could find by him that was actually Irish music. But I thought I'd play an Irish tune in the John Fahey style. This is, I think it's called The Funeral March of King Laius, or something like that. Thank you. Well, of course, after John Fahey died, people had things to say about it. Samuel Charters, who was a blues historian and worked with John Fahey on two records in the mid-60s, said, "He was the only artist I ever worked with whose sales went down after he made public appearances." Leo Kottke said, "By choice, John lived a difficult life. He made my life what it is. He recorded me, supported me, and remained my friend for over 30 years. I remember his beard in my ear when we were both playing at the Wart Hotel in Jackson Hole, and his stretched voice whispering, 'Sing something. You have a great voice.' He hated my voice." "I remember turtles, tons of them, around his office, his home. Even the turtles were unhappy." So he was an unusual life, and it was a life. He never did achieve the, even in, I guess, my own history. I'm going to do some originals now. And I never entitled the song Almost a Fahey, but I did entitle this one Almost a Kottke. I've just got a couple more songs to do. This next one is kind of a long instrumental piece. It sometimes sort of harkens back to itself, but moves forward throughout. And it's called Blueberry Mountain. Thank you. Let's see. And this one's called Down to the Racetrack because it's vaguely based on a tune by that name. Thank you. And now for my final song, I'm going to do a song by Elizabeth Cotton, who is best known for writing the song Freight Train. It does happen that she and John Fahey's lives did coincide for a while. That John Fahey said of her that he didn't learn that much from her because she was left-handed and played her guitar like this, with the strings left the way they were, sort of upside down. And so it was hard for a regular guitarist to figure out much of what she was doing except for the tunes. But he said they sometimes played at parties together and had mutual respect. But she was also a great instrumental guitarist and definitely one of John Fahey's sources. Back again. Thank you.